Hi, I'm Scott Fitzpatrick. Welcome to the GAF podcast. This podcast is for professionals who want to work in the advisory space. It's a series of conversations and essential frameworks to give better advice. It's the stuff they don't teach you at uni. It's where value sits. So buckle in, volume up, let's go. In this podcast, I talk with Stephanie Bowne, organisational psychologist, a leader in the field in leadership and cultural development inside businesses. If you're a business advisor, this is one worth listening to. Welcome to another episode of the GAF podcast. I'm very excited to have Stephanie Bowne here with me. Now, Stephanie, I'm not going to get this right, but I'm going to get you to give me your background, but somewhere between positive psychology, organizational dynamics, leadership, culture, development programs, multi-international companies, best-selling author. Have I missed anything?
Oh, you're really making me sound amazing here, Scott. Thank you for that. Appreciate that intro. Yes, it's all things people, culture and strategy. Leadership, culture and strategy is my practice. I work with leaders and leadership teams around Australia and around the world to help them connect, align and inspire better.
Oh, I've already got shivers thinking about this podcast. So let's before we launch into it, I've got like 3 pages of notes I want to get to. But how did you start in this business? Give us your background.
Yeah, look, I was really lucky as a teenager growing up. I knew what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to go into psychology from a pretty young age. I was very lucky to have a very influential family member, an uncle who was an organizational psychologist, who took the time to sit down with me and go through a number of psychometric assessment tests to help me choose a career path. You know, in year 10, you've got to start choosing subjects. And I sort of knew I wanted to go down that road, but having that conversation with him really confirmed it. And so he really encouraged me to go on that journey. And so I knew I wanted to do psychology. I knew I wanted to do organizational psychology, so the psychology of human performance at work, pretty early on as well. So did my undergrad and studied psych, neuropsych, sciences. Could have gone really in any direction and loved all of the psych world, but knew that my world, what I wanted to work with, high performers. So I wanted to help people go from average to better rather than from unwell to just okay. And so that sort of led me down the path and the career where I really got to apply that the learnings from the program was in a management consulting career. So I got to work with lots of different businesses to help them design leadership programs and culture change programs and implement those things. So learned how to be a consultant really early on as well. And just always loved that, loved working with different businesses, with different teams, understanding different personalities, how all of those dynamics come together. And it wasn't until later on that I decided to go back and do a master's and did that in organisation dynamics. So it was a lot about how groups interrelate and how organisational structures and systems influence human behaviour. So that sort of led me very early on down that road.
Well, I'm flabbergasted already. But that's really interesting. That there was an influential person in your life, and the quick story for me is that my teacher at school was Brian Fitzpatrick, no relation to me, but he was just exceptional with people. And when I said to him 25 years ago, "I'm building a people business, Brian. I want you to come and be the monk in the business."
Yeah.
And hence he became our, you know, what you'd call emotional intelligence now, but it didn't have a term back then. And he's been the people person inside our business. So I get the impact of having that significant person early on. But so let's launch into this because there's lots of different topics I wanted to touch on. And remember, the context of this podcast is for advisors wishing to work with successful families and successful business owners and the types of skills I'd like them to think about or be across, not necessarily in.
Yes.
And I think when dealing with businesses, there's somewhere between culture and leadership, some points I want to tease out for you. But firstly, if I could start with how do people get it so wrong in terms of culture around a business or leadership in a business?
Yeah, look, that's such a great question. And I think given the group of people this podcast is for, The typical owner, operator, entrepreneur, privately owned company, they are geared towards, innovating, coming up with a great product, dealing with customers, growing their customer base. They're typically very, very good at product and sales and really just kind of bringing that product to market and growing that product in market. They're not necessarily like trained in leadership or trained in the kind of skills required to bring people on that journey with them. And so typically in that sort of genesis of an organization, when it starts and the entrepreneur brings people in, you know, just their pure energy, their values, it seeps into, it influences the types of people they bring in for starters, but it seeps into the culture pretty quickly. When you're close to that individual and you're operating day to day with that individual driving that business, you get the culture, you get the values, you create a culture based on that entrepreneur and who they are and how they actually want to connect with their customers. Typically then what happens is if they are really successful and they start to bring more people into their business and more people come into that business, and then their opportunity to touch base with all of those individuals gets less and less and less. So the kind of nucleus of the culture comes a little bit diluted because they can't be across everyone and everything anymore. And it's at that point where we need to start getting really clear about what's the overt expectation for how people need to work together and behave in order to deliver their exceptional product and service. And often what's happened is that leader of that organization hasn't codified that. They haven't actually said, all right, these are our values. This is how we want to live our values. This is how I expect leaders to work together. This is how we're going to hold each other accountable, because they're just doing it. You know, they're expecting that their role modeling is going to drive that outcome.
Yeah, no, that's great. I just wanted to hold that thought that they're so caught up in the doing, but also they've never had any training or any awareness that this is the thing we should be thinking about.
Totally.
And I think you've mentioned that magic number of about 50 staff.
So I think, there's a critical mass really where that individual just cannot influence everyone anymore the way that they used to. So when you start to get to that size of organization, they really need to start thinking about leadership and culture. So who's their leadership team? What's the structure they want to put in place? How are they helping their leadership team create accountability across the whole organization? And what's the type of experience they want their people to have so that they can create that experience for their customers? So those questions start to become relevant because they just simply cannot. They need to become that inspiring leader. And exactly that point you're making, leadership is a learned skill. It's not something, you can be born with the traits or potential talent to lead, but you need the skills to lead. There's very specific things good leaders do. So actually learning some of those skills is really helpful. And then having a team of leaders around you or a culture of people who want to take ownership for the experience people have is another really key thing that drives that outcome.
And I'm sure everyone listening in just went, okay, am I a good leader or not? Just tell me what those leadership, rattle off a few leadership traits for me, for our listeners to give themselves a bit of a checklist on. What would they be?
Yeah, so I think that there's a leadership, I call it a leadership system, if you like, but it is written about in my book if people want to go and have a look at it, and I've also got a podcast if they want to listen to them. Leadership is a system. It's a system of behaviours, essentially. So it's a process of setting really clear goals and expectations. It's creating and normalising a feedback culture. So it's actually giving people feedback based on whether or not they're meeting those expectations. And it's coaching and developing people's strengths. And there's basically those three bubbles, if you like. It's a three-bubble Venn. And I think what happens is people can be potentially quite good at setting expectations in terms of like setting a vision, setting some goals, setting some KPIs. But are they being deliberate about how they cascade those expectations through the business? So that's number one. And secondly, are they setting expectations not just about the goals and the deliverables, but also about behaviour? So that's where organisational values need to come into play, because we're saying we ask that you are respectful and you show respect by listening and taking on others' feedback and sharing your view. Like, this is what respect looks like in our business. So being clear on your expectations for performance and for behaviour is one way to start to influence that culture really directly. But then also actually having a system and a process and a habit around giving feedback. I think people think that just because they've shared their expectations, well, they just assume that's being communicated and people get it. We actually need to help people understand where they're at in relation to those expectations consistently and give feedback and ask for feedback and make feedback part of the culture.
Let me hold you there again. I think what I see a lot of is that people sit there and they do their, you know, the one-page business plan and they get their goals and vision and mission put up on their own piece of paper.
Yeah.
But then we drop that and we spend more of our time on management than leadership.
Yeah.
Yes. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah.
And I think there's a big difference between the two.
Yeah.
And I think it was that third bubble you were talking about.
Yeah, I love that. And I do love that discussion about leadership and management. How do you actually define the difference between the two? I'm really curious to hear your perspective on that.
Well, leadership for me is obviously having the vision right, staying in front of the next cycle as well. So looking past what's currently happening now, looking into the future. So there's some visionary work in there. But then it's also, you know, casting a net over your people and going, right, what do our people need? How do we build the A team, or how do we build and develop our people?
Yeah.
And then that's different to implementation, which is quite often around management, which is more management, governance, those types of things sit inside there.
Yes. Yeah, it's more of a, I feel like they create this, management's a very transactional activity and leadership's a very transformational activity, and they're both necessary. But people get inspired by leaders, right? They need to be inspired. So we can't force anyone to perform. What we need to do is create an environment in which they can actually thrive, where they feel like there's goals and objectives they want to work towards, where they're getting the learning and the coaching and the training that they need to perform, and they're actually getting good feedback. They know how they're going. They're being acknowledged for the work that they're doing. And that's the, you know, that's the set expectations, normalized feedback, coach strengths. If you can just create a bit of a rhythm around how you do that, then you know that you're doing the leading bit as well as you're doing the managing bit.
And so, you know, in an ideal world, how much time should be spent on leadership versus management? And I know that's such a, well, I don't know what the word is. Like, that's such a,
it's a
hard
really
question.
Good.
Is it, or is it just the stage of the cycle of the business where the leader needs to be aware, right, more leadership's needed here versus management, or right, we're in a heavy management cycle here?
It's such a good question. I don't know, and I've wrestled with this. I don't think it's got anything to do with the size of the business. And everything to do with your mindset. So I like to apply that. I differentiate it as leading versus doing, right? You're either leading and influencing people, or you're doing the work, you're doing the do. If you're a leader of an organization, if it's your organization, if you think about that 80-20 rule, right? So I would say the senior people, the most senior people in that organization need to be spending 80% of their time leading and 20% of their time doing. If they're in the middle, then it's about 50-50. And if they're in the front line, they need to be spending more like 20% of their time leading and 80% of their time doing. And that's kind of a benchmark, because no matter what stage your business is at, the more doing you're doing, the less you're actually able to focus on growth and change and connecting with customers and product development and all those sorts of things that entrepreneurs need to do. Ultimately, what you don't want to be doing, you want to make yourself redundant, right? You don't actually want to be doing any of the do. You want to be leading the teams to execute the vision and the strategy. And so I think that's where a lot of entrepreneurs and founders get themselves locked in terms of their growth. They're doing too much of it themselves. And they need to learn that delegation, that authorization of others to get involved and support their growth.
That's great. So, and then you look and you go, well, okay, well, we recognise this now, but we haven't got the skills and capabilities to do this.
Yeah.
Quite often I hear, oh, isn't that the HR department's job?
Yeah. I know. Yeah,
isn't their job looking after the people?
Yeah. I mean, HR is there to support, to provide the systems and the processes, the people processes. They set that up. But leaders need to lead. HR can't lead, right? I mean, HR leaders lead, of course. They lead their own teams. But they can't do the leadership on behalf of the leaders of the business. I completely agree with you on that point.
It's just, and I look at different leaders in different businesses and I go, How did you get to be the leader in that business? Were you the owner? Were you the founder? And obviously, you're, you know, the ultimate leader there. So then we need some awareness around we've hit this 50 people mark. Mm. I need to bring Stephanie into the business, or I want to build a leadership team and bring them new skills and capabilities. Maybe I've got a management team today, but I need to transform the management team to a leadership team.
Yeah.
Is that the piece of the puzzle?
Yeah, look, there's a number of steps that you can go through and undertake. I think typically I'll start with an organisation around that 50 to 100 mark, and they haven't been necessarily doing the work of learning how to lead or doing the leadership very well, and they've recognised they need to change. Where that process normally starts is actually creating the one-page plan and aligning on it. So you'd be surprised. A lot of business owners and entrepreneurs have it in their head, or they know it with their accountant, or they've got it, you know, they've documented it somehow, somewhere. But until that thing actually lives in the minds of everybody in the organisation, it's not going to direct action. So it is about just agreeing as a leadership team, getting together and working together on building that one-page plan.
Yep.
Yeah, yep. Being really clear on that and actually outlining what it is at 1, at 3, at 5 years, documenting that, communicating that to the whole business, helping people, individuals understand how they need to contribute to that. That sets people up to know how they can perform. So that's a really big part of leading. I think the other part of that is as a leadership team, learning how to work well together. So I'm recognizing that you are the nexus of the culture. So how that leadership team work together influences how every other team in the business is going to work together. So helping that leadership team understand how their behaviours are being experienced and perceived by each other and by the rest of the business, because their behaviour is what drives the culture, is really important. So usually at that stage I'd suggest going through a 360-degree feedback process, whether that's using a diagnostic or not, but actually giving each other some really solid data on how you're all actually being perceived as people, as leaders in the business.
Right. And sorry, I've cut you off again.
No, going,
but no, I just keep having this. Is that so? Where does psychological profiling fit in there to understand who's in the leadership team and all the different personalities that we have interacting there?
It's definitely part of that. Like the feedback is learn about yourself as a leader, but also learn about how you can change your behaviours to influence the culture in the direction that it actually needs to go, right? So I'm a big advocate for leaders doing self-development work, like learn about your own personality, learn about the personalities of the others in the group. And that's all fine. I think even more powerful, the next step to that is understanding and agreeing on, as a group, how do we need to be behaving to support the performance of this business? Now, some value, that's why different organizations have different sets of values, because those are the types of foundational behaviors that enable that business to be successful in its own market. You know, you don't want massive, innovative, fast track change, pace, all that in a stable institution. You know, you want that in a fast growth startup, in an entrepreneurial culture. But so you've got to define on what does it actually look like for us to be successful? And regardless of your type of personality, what's really important for us to actually, like, how do we need to be as a team and be accountable to that? You know, it's not okay to say, hey, we've got the value of respect, but I don't have to listen to your feedback. Everybody has to just listen to mine. You know, that's not okay. So how do you create that environment in that team where people can actually be honest and really hold each other accountable and have a real conversation about behaviour? And then that then allows that strength, that bond within that team to own it and grow it and change it and go with the pain of growth, because it is challenging to grow. And it is challenging to lead a culture in the direction of values. So that's, you know, that strength of connection in the leadership team is really crucial for all of that.
Yeah, so that's fantastic. When I look at something close to my own heart, the Fitzpatrick's Private Wealth Group, and, you know, we've got 4 or 5 different cultures within that group.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the advisor force, you've got the head office or license, operating model there. You've got the investment team, which is a performance culture, and then throw all that together in a group culture, I suppose.
You
go, wow, you know, no wonder we get some conflict from time to time. Or
I think that's actually really, really healthy. So so you're talking about subcultures within a culture, and in every organization, organizations are made up of individuals who are in teams who are working as a whole. So every team is a subculture within an organization. And I think really what we can, the mindset we can create in an organization is to say, we as an organization have a set of values. These are foundational for all of us. We all connect and align on this. And we're all serving the same purpose, right? That's what brings us together as a whole.
There's the glue.
Correct. That's the thing that kind of bonds us and binds us together. Really, then what we want is for different teams who serve different purposes. So if you've got subcultures who have different even customer groups or potentially different customer groups, is to have that like flexibility and adaptability within the culture to say the way we actually represent those values is slightly different. So how respect might look in the financial team might be different to how respect looks in the, you know, in another part of the business. And in fact, a lot of the work that I do with leadership teams is about how do you actually welcome conflict? Because it's good if we can have different viewpoints, we can have different perspectives and opinions, and we can listen to those, because what that does is that drives innovation, that drives creativity. What we want is for people to understand what's the conflict about, what's the different viewpoints, how can we listen to those things and change the way we think? How can we come up with something that's new because it's different? Yeah.
Which is, I assume, sometimes a challenge in a hierarchical organisation.
Yeah, look, it is. But I think, again, if you can create that trust and respect at the senior level, people, the rest of the organisation can see, no matter what's going on, the differences that might occur in marketing and sales, for example.
Yep.
If they can see their marketing and sales executives working through the challenge, because they've got this respect for each other, they don't necessarily have to like each other or be the same types of people, but because they can work through it, that allows the rest of the other teams to kind of follow suit. So it does come down to, you know, you can't, in an organization, culture is it's a system, you know, it's an actual system of behaviors. So it's about correlations of things happening. And if we live these values and we demonstrate that we're committed to values, then that kind of allows people to be flexible and adaptable in the way that they actually approach them.
You may have run across Michael Henderson, the New Zealand anthropologist, and he talks about the arrow trying to, you know, you've got your target and you've got the arrow, and the fletch on the arrow, which is, you know, elevate, is the cultural piece. So he talks about just having a culture on purpose.
Yes.
Depending on where you're trying to get to.
Yeah.
So what is the culture that you need to wrap around the strategy?
Yeah, correct. It does. It comes out. What's our why? Why are we here? Who are we serving? What do our customers need from us? And that, you know, that ultimately is what's more important than the different needs of the different groups or departments. It's about who we're here to serve. So let's make them the priority and let's kind of work through the challenges.
So how do we do a, you know, I love reading your stuff on LinkedIn, by the way.
Oh, it's fantastic. Thank you.
You've got, no, it's a really great content. I really love it. But that concept of a one, you know, building a culture plan or putting a culture plan on one page.
Yeah. So I think it's great to have a business plan, and that's really important. And alongside that, the second most important thing for your business to know is our culture plan. How are we actually going to create a culture that supports the achievement of business objectives? And so it's great to have a set of values, but how are you going to live them? What does it look like to live them? And so really that's about the leadership team agreeing, A, on how behaviourally they as a team are going to role model those values, but secondly, how do we thread that into the way we're actually treating people at each stage of their employee life cycle? So it is about kind of looking at your employee journey from, you know, attraction to recruitment to onboarding to being managed and performance and being developed to being promoted to leaving. You know, like there's a path that employees follow in an organization. And really thinking about those touch points and how can we make each of those touch points a really, you know, authentic experience for each employee. And that kind of shows that you're authentic about how you live these values. You're really dedicated to creating a great workplace and a great culture. That means you're going to easily attract good talent. You're going to have processes and programs for keeping those people in place if you really want to retain that talent. And it also means you become a little bit like the talk of the industry, like people are valued there, your experience is valued. So they ultimately want to stay and they deliver great stuff. Like they do awesome things for your people. They innovate, they go beyond, you know, they tap into their brain, they actually use their brain, they're creative. And that's the sort of thing that you need to remain competitive. So there's a lot of payoff to investing in your employees and your culture. But it's not a direct line. It's not an item on a balance sheet.
This is great.
Yeah.
It is. It's hard to justify it. And I think that's the struggle for some business leaders to go, how much money do I spend on this? Is it the first dollar I spend or the last? And quite often it's the last.
Yes.
Or I had, that was one question. But the second question I had was, I often see in an organization that we've got the great salesperson in there, but culturally he doesn't fit into the group.
Yes.
And when are we ready to let him or her go?
That is a tough one. You know, that is a really tough one. And I understand the struggle with that. You've got this great individual contributor, but they are having a negative impact on the rest of the culture. There's a lot of data to suggest that these, you know, brilliant jerks, Atlassian calls them brilliant jerks, they're rainmakers in terms of they generate money, but they stifle the performance of everybody else. So it's actually, there's a lot of hidden cost to having those people in your team. And if you really want to be a great culture and you want to inspire people to perform, you've really got to toe the line on your values. And if people aren't living them, you know, the most decisive action you can make is to let go of the rainmakers who are toxic. Yeah.
Makes a mockery of your whole system. And I think that also extends itself to clients that you need to let go of, where I remember in the past we've had some really, you know, one particular client, I won't name them.
Yes.
They know who they are. And, but the whole office would be on edge every time they rang. And value-wise, they were just a completely different value set to what we were trying to build. And the day they left was I completely missed the revenue, but it was like this whole energy, you know, release inside the business for everybody.
So what was the turning point for you to decide to let them go, like let it go?
I think the anxiety or the tension of waiting to hear the phone ring and hoping it wasn't them.
Mm-hmm. That was just a big sign for you.
The anxiety levels inside the office were just going through the roof. And I'm like, you know what? It's not worth it.
Yeah. And look, I mean, there's similar sort of bells are ringing when you've got an employee who's doing the same, right? So it is about listening to your people and listening to your instincts a little bit. I was the performance partner for the Swiss executive team before and during and just after their sale. One of their major customers was grocery. You know, it was Woolies and Coles, but it was minimizing. They had a massive impact on margin, and they were taking attention away from the pharmacy channel, who were generating all of the margin. And so they had to make the decision to leave grocery, and that was huge. I mean, grocery income is massive. It's a massive revenue line, but ultimately they had to just make that call, and they did. You know, to their credit at the time. So. Yeah, it's a big decision to make, but it's worth it if you want to have a healthy, sustainable business where there's less stress and, you know, better performance.
So we're going to run out of time soon, and I've got all these things on my whiteboard that I've got to get through. But just talk me through for those listening, for those to reflect on while they're driving along in their car, the culture ladder that you've developed around it. You know, adaptive, inclusive, silo, defensive, or toxic, for us to reflect on.
Yeah. So look, I think if you want to really think about the value, this is about understanding the value of culture. And cultures at their very worst are toxic, because what's happening in those cultures, people are actually they're being hostile. They're focusing on protecting themselves. It's more about self-protection than it is about business performance. So it's really damaging to the outcome of the business, and it's exhausting. So that's the very worst type of culture. Defensive cultures are the next kind of level of performance. And people are focused on self-protection, but instead of being hostile, they're actually just avoidant. So they just won't get involved in things. They won't touch them. Everything's a hot potato. They'll do their little bit, but they won't go beyond that. And so nothing really gets finished and no one owns the mistakes. And then you've got, after defensive, a siloed operation, which most organizations are caught in this siloed functioning because of the way we are structured. People sort of just work in their own silos, which means things don't connect across the business very well, unless that leadership team are doing a great job of linking the chain. And so what's happening there is that people are just sort of conforming. They're conforming to the standard of their own team rather than thinking beyond their team and collaborating across teams. And they're sort of doing that enough to get by, but certainly not amplifying potential by connecting. And then after that, we start to get better performance when we see inclusive cultures, which is really about people belonging and collaborating. So we're trying to create an environment where no matter what team you're in, you're part of an organization, we're all working together to achieve these outcomes, and people can be brave and step out of their comfort zone and out of their role and actually start to work well across the business. And then ultimately, the most high-performing culture is an adaptive culture. Which is not just about collaborating, it's about innovating. So it's about actually taking some risks, trying things out, being okay with making mistakes, seeing mistakes as learning opportunities, making it okay for people to actually go and give things a go and have a trial and error approach to iterating. And that generates some enormous creativity, and it means we can not just stay up with our market, we can innovate beyond where the market's at, so we can be market leaders. But to do that, we need to focus on creating that really strong learning environment. It's okay to learn. It's okay to grow in this culture. We support everybody's experience. So that's really the ultimate game.
No, I get it. That's great. I think we can all look at that and go, oh, I've had a little bit of that in the past, and I can see myself in there, and we're working toward. Just quickly, can you just run me through, those three different sort of parts of the program that you run around design, connect, and inspire?
Yeah, so I like to work with leadership teams, as I said before, on those three things, on how to connect, align, and inspire their people. And some clients work with me, they incorporate all three programs, if you like, and that's where I, essentially become their high-performance partner. But I can also work with people on those elements separately. So Connect is about transforming culture. It's really about helping those leaders do that 360 degree feedback, get really clear on their behavior, align their behaviors to their values, and be authentic and accountable to how they're actually working together to create the culture that they need. And that's what that program is about. The Align program is about creating that one-page plan, so getting together to agree on strategy. What is our strategic vision? How does it serve our purpose? What's the short, medium, and long term? And then what are the kind of priorities for the next 12-month period? And then that might also be, I might also come back quarterly to help them execute that. And then the third thing, the Inspire program, is developing those leadership skills. So it's actually learning how to lead, how to set goals, how to give feedback, how to coach, and how to build a strengths-based kind of mindset in your business. So each of those programs are, a number of 1 or 2 days. I've got brochures for them that people can read them from my website if they're interested.
No, that's fantastic. Listen, we're going to wrap this up but I am going to get you back on because we've still got more things to talk about. But as a start point, everyone, purpose, passion, and performance, so they should grab hold of your book, is a great start point. But also, I like to ask people about, their rock for the year. If you had to put one word on your rock for the year, your big context, what would that be for you, do you think?
For me, it's a really good question. I have probably I've got a big rock and a second rock, if you like.
So good, that's okay.
My big rock is to finish my second book. I am 3/4 of the way through the first draft of it. I've got a publisher who's interested. She's given me June for a deadline, and I'm actively working towards that. So that's really big for me. It's
complete
time and effort. Yep. I said that my second rock really just is being very clear in the way that I'm talking to my clients. So I'm more of a practice and less of a business. I'm on a practice model, so it's me. I work with my clients directly. So my challenge is time and energy management. So really just trying to get that balance right so I can be the best when I'm with my clients. Be able to sustain what I do for a long time, because I really, really love what I do. I really love being in front of people and helping them work together better. It's really, you know, something that drives me forward. So those are my two big ones for the year.
Yeah, I heard Scott, balance in the second one.
Yeah, Stephanie, look, that, I don't know if balance is such an elusive idea, balance, but I think it's more I think it's energy. It's energy management for me, really. Yeah. That's what it comes down to. How about you? What are your rocks? I'm keen to hear what yours are.
My rock this year is healthy.
Okay, great.
So healthy me, healthy relationship with my wife, healthy with my kids, and a healthy business.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I love that. That applies in all three domains. Yeah, it does.
Nice, it works. That works for me, that one.
Yeah.
So listen, we're going to wrap this up. If we want to find you, I think LinkedIn's probably the best spot to find you. Is that right?
Yes.
Stephanie Brown, otherwise.
It's actually Stephanie Bowen. I know a lot of people make that. Don't
know. Oh, my goodness.
It's fine. Everybody does that. Don't even worry. It's okay.
It's sitting there right in front of me too, Bowen. I can't believe that.
Do you know, I had a conversation with someone on the phone and she was like, excuse me, but I was booking into a home. She goes, I think your surname is spelled wrong on your credit card. I was like, no, it's actually bad.
Oh, my goodness.
So don't worry. I mean, it's actually a really interesting thing around the brain. It just wants to fill the gaps, doesn't it? It does that. So it is bound. But yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn, and I also have a website. You can find me there too.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. That's been
my pleasure.
Enlightening to say the least. But I really love it. I could talk about this stuff all day. I am passionate about it.
Yeah,
and I see the difference it makes in people's lives. So look, thank you. Continue the good work, and we will chat again.
Absolutely. I can't wait. I really enjoyed it. And thank you all for listening as well. It's been a joy.
Thanks for listening to the GAF podcast. We've now developed the Essentials Package for advisors. It's the collaterals video and training for you to work in this high net wealth space. Also, we're running a course for those who want to work with significant families and significant individuals. For more information, go to thegaf.com.au.